Greetings from K9 to Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum. End of message.
Times and places, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 163 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Aidan.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Tony.
Hey.
Well, welcome back all. Mark and I have just about recovered from the exertions of the Dwast Capital 5 convention. Tony is, I mean, you had a fairly easy time of it, didn't you really, Tony, from what I hear?
Events like the Capital pretty much just organise themselves, don't they?
Of course they do, mate.
Just press start and off they go.
I want to let you into a secret. It's sometime after the event. I'm still waiting for fish and chips in bar 92.
No.
We are joined, of course, once again by Mr. Tony Jordan of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, who normally, after a Capital event, we would hang around and drag him into the green room with a large scotch in order to give us a wash-up of what had been happening all the weekend. But Tony was looking increasingly frazzled as the weekend went along, so we decided, well, let's do the podcast afterwards. So, in fact, it's almost exactly a week since we departed Capital. Mark and I had a splendid time. I'm nervous to ask. How did you think it went, Tony?
I can only go on the feedback I've had from people at the event, on what I've seen on the internet, on social media. And there seems to have been elements of euphoria, to be honest. Not necessarily because it was the Capital, but as I was pointing out at the podcast we did before it, because it was a real step towards normality. 315 people together over a weekend celebrating Doctor Who, rekindling friendships, making new friendships, and just having a very good time.
Although it's the NHF's COVID app on my phone has been like a mariachi band since I got back. So it's really ping, ping, ping. You have been pinged with someone. I've taken three lateral flow tests since I got back, and they've all been negative.
Yeah, same here. I forgot I even had the app on. It just started pinging middle of last week. So
I'm only aware of three people who have actually tested positive. There are probably more. But if you took a statistical analysis, and if one in 20 people in the UK are positive with it, then you'd have 15 people coming home from there with it. Mm. And I haven't heard of that many.
So we left it at least a week in order to allow Tony's voice to recover, which apparently had been reduced to a croak, hadn't it, Tony, by Sunday?
Well, the trouble is, basically, I haven't done any public speaking for 3 years.
Of course not, yes.
No, and so my voice isn't used to me projecting and talking a load of baloney at regular intervals across, you were in on the pre-event meeting on the Friday evening, so I'd spent all weekends talking. As Orchestral Maneuvers once said, talking loud and clear, or trying to. And basically, by the time that Caroline Ford got her Outstanding Achievement Award presented by Peter Purvis, the voice had virtually gone.
Right, so we have assembled to look back on the event. Mark and I arrived at Crawley Friday evening. I think we spent most of the night, didn't we, in the hotel bar? Didn't we, Mark? We popped. Just down around the corner is possibly the largest Sainsbury's we've ever seen in our lives.
It was terrifying. I got a terrible case of agoraphobia. It was like entering the Death Star. It was just enormous.
And having checked the bar food menu, we thought, oh, there's a drive-through McDonald's, will pop in there. Oh, it took us so long. It's full of these Deliveroo people and Just
Eat. Yes, they've taken over, haven't they?
Yeah.
Waiting to collect them.
Yeah, it's actually better for you to stand outside the door and go online, order it through Deliveroo.
Who yes. will
then walk it from the counter to the door for you. You'll get it about a quarter of an hour quicker.
I think next year Mark and I will go in our biker leathers with, what do they call them? Lids.
Lids.
So they'll think, we're Mark and Doc from Deliveroo.
You're going to turn up in biking leathers to a Doctor Who convention.
I'll tell you who once did that several years ago. The late, great Philip Maddock. I interviewed a Dalek movie in Chiswick. And Philip was there, Ray Brooks, Sheila Stiefel and Ray Hines, who was one of the Dalek operators. And Philip, in his mid-70s, turned up full leathers, had rode his bike down from North London. Absolutely incredible. Top man.
Was that the Dalek Mania event, by any chance?
Not an affair. No, it wasn't to do with the release of the what was it back then? Probably DVDs, wasn't it? And things. No. It was just a Dalek themed event, and there was a panel.
Oh, right.
And there was a panel with them in it. You know what? I know an event that was held just a week ago that had a Dalek movie panel.
Mm. Let's talk about that one. How did that go? What was it like getting Jenny? Was it Jenny Linden up on stage with Roberta?
No, she couldn't make it, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry. No. The name of the Jill Curzon. Jill Curzon, that's it.
We flew Jill Curzon in from Spain, especially for the weekend.
Wow.
We were chasing Roberta Tovey from 2019. Obviously, we didn't say anything. And then we got the yes 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, which absolutely was fantastic. And I might say it now. We had, for the first time ever on stage, we had the two Susans together on stage. First time, 57 years. So we slipped in a little extra panel in between the Dalek movie one and the one with Peter Purvis and Caroline Ford. Just 15 minutes of them on stage together. But the reception the two of them got was something very special. And I actually just did that interview just to block it off. But that last hour and 40 minutes or so was very special.
It's when things like that get set up that you realise quite how much stuff has gone on behind the scenes. I was going to say for the last 12 months, actually for the last 36 months.
Yeah.
With this sort of thing. So now Friday night we got grabbed by Rick Moran in the bar.
Yes, no, that was really nice of him, wasn't it, actually?
Was that guy called Beef, wasn't he?
Oh, Beef!
He called us over and introduced us to his friends, Beef and Ian.
Oh, Beef. What a legend.
How do you know him? Because we weren't familiar with him.
No, I'd never met him before, but he became a legend overnight. I was going to go to bed early on Friday night. And when the bar was kicking us out at about 1:15, I thought, oh, no. Oh, Jordan, what have you done? And I got up at 6:50 in the morning as well. I didn't get to bed till about 2, so it was... there you go.
So how did he become a legend?
He's just a top man. I just love him. He's just very funny, very self-deprecating. I don't know how I've never met him before.
No.
So the revelation of season 22 was a panel with Graham Harper and Eric Saywood.
And that was a lovely start to the weekend, I thought, because it was nice to see Karen back up there interviewing. It was a really good interview. I thought Eric, who's getting on a bit now, isn't he, bless him, he was a little bit slow, but once he warmed up, he was great value and was quite funny as well. So that panel worked really well. I thought Graham, Harper, Eric Saywood, was a great start.
Oh, my blood still runs cold when I think of the time when I tried to make a joke with Eric Saywood.
Of course.
When he said to me in the green room, I think it was the first Capital event, and he said to me, are there any doctors here today? And I said, why, are you feeling unwell? And he just looked at me and went, you know what I mean. Like that. Oh, I'm sorry.
And then I think we missed the Figure It Out panel that followed, didn't we, Mark, with John Ainsworth and Chris Thompson? Or did we?
No, we saw the start of it, but we headed off to start trying to hunt down interviews, didn't we?
Podcast. Given that some of the greatest interviews we ever had have been ones that happened entirely by chance, like when we happened to bump into Annika at breakfast one time. We'd researched most of the guests, but we were thinking about the most important ones. We will research them and think of ideas for questions, but we will do it without much expectation that unless something strange happens, we'll ever meet them. And we were thinking, there's no way on God's earth that we'll ever get anywhere near Deskin. Whereas, in fact, we ended up spending about half the weekend with him, didn't we, Mark?
Yes, mostly in the bar.
He was a great guest, very friendly, very talkative, very knowing. I hoped to spend a bit of time chatting with him, but it was just a couple of brief conversations. But I thought, yeah, I was really pleased we had him.
Not all the listeners will know, but Deskin wrote and edited a load of comics from our childhoods, from my dog's childhood, I mean, like Wizard and Chips and Buster and Core. And then he launched Warrior Comic, which helped launch the careers of Alan Moore and launched V for Vendetta. And he launched Hulk Weekly as well for Marvel, which had some brilliant strips in it, like Night Raven, I was particularly fond of. And if you were buying comics in the sort of 70s through to the early 80s, chances are that in the UK that you'd be reading some sort of Deskin publications. And he also, he launched Doctor Who Weekly, which is still going today under as Doctor Who magazine. So he's an extraordinary character. He's had an extraordinary career. And I was extremely keen to talk to him, actually. He was the one person.
That's why we missed that John Ainsworth, Chris Thompson panel, because we thought, well, the next panel is going to be Des, so let's try and see if we can inveigle ourselves into one of the dealer's rooms, into the cutaway, because he was there with Cutaway Comics. And we just walked up. I had the less daunting task of just walking up and introducing myself finally to Gareth Gavanna from Cutaway. Gareth, of course, was on Diddly Dumb Podcast 32 back in 2015.
And he publishes Vought magazine as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. And Mark had the slightly more daunting task of introducing himself to Des, who's on the same table. But he just did it completely blithely. And conversation went really well, didn't it?
He was very approachable, very chatty. I mean, it's hard to get away from him. But I mean that in a nice way, do you know?
Yeah.
He was happy to talk to people, happy to talk to the fans who were there. And very proud of his work as well. And he was selling copies of his book one of his autobiography, Says Des, which I bought a copy of.
Not just any copy, Mark.
Well, not just any copy. I purchased the first copy ever sold.
Oh, wow.
So, yes.
I think it was slightly intimidating because we imagined he'd be, you know, someone who's quite, you know, floating up in the ether somewhere. Whereas it turns out you couldn't meet anyone more down to earth.
Oh, he couldn't be any more down to earth.
That's the perfect expression for Des, down to earth. And I thought he had a really nice hat as well.
Oh, it was Terry Pratchett.
It was Terry Pratchett deliberately.
That's true. Yeah. Good call.
And here's with the next part. Who was it? Gareth interviewing him on his next panel, wasn't it?
It was. That was the next one. Yeah, it was a busy first couple of hours, wasn't it?
Mm.
And then we missed Gothic Horror with Prentice Hancock, Michael McStay and Sadie Miller.
I'm told that went down very well. We got Sadie late on because one of my team said that she is incredibly popular. She was so receptive to coming down. And I think she went down a storm and it worked really well, from what I'm told, worked really well with her alongside two people who'd appeared in season 13, which remains my great favourite season of all time. And for me, on the Friday night, I had a chance to have a little chat with Michael McStay, who is 88 years old now, but for me, he will forever be Derek Moberly. One episode, but what an episode. And we talked about Dougie Canfield quite a bit, because he was good friends with Dougie and Paula Dunn. And it was really interesting. Then come the Saturday, as ever, I didn't even get a photo with Mike. This is the trouble. You organise it, you just don't see people. So I'm glad that happened on the Friday night. His wife, Jenny, is lovely as well. She was in a couple of Carry On films, his wife. But I spoke to Sadie a couple of times when she first arrived, and she was just gorgeous, lovely, so warm. And I think she went down very well with the attendees and my crew alike. Everyone fell in love with her.
Sadie, as I'm sure 99% of our listeners know, is Liz Sladen's daughter. Moberly, was that the guy with the beard at the ice station?
Yes. He gets killed at the end. Yeah, the one who's already turned into a pseudo-crinoid strangles him at the end of episode one.
That sounds like an executive meeting of the DWASH, that. You're turning into a synod and strangling each other.
You don't know how close to the truth that is.
And then the next panel was, afternoon tea with, someone, I forget who.
Do you know, I can tell you now that I told you when we did the last thing, I'd had a meeting with the hotel 3 weeks before. Blah, 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 yeah, we'll do this. And the one specific request I had, at 2 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon, I would like 2 scones with a scoop of clotted cream and some jam delivered to the green room. And at 2 minutes to 2, I reminded someone of the hotel staff that this was due in 2 minutes' time. And just before we went on stage, I was told, they hadn't done it. So it got very surreal because, first of all, we had these tuna sweet corn sandwiches, which were taken from the green room.
Which Katie wouldn't eat because...
No, because it was tuna. And yeah. I wouldn't eat because they looked as though they'd seen better days. Then Patrick White, about 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, came in with this tray that had 2 teapots, a nice milk jug, and a couple of cups. And I thought, excellent. So after 2 or 3 minutes, I picked up the milk jug, went to pour, and it was completely empty. And then I picked up a teapot, and it was empty, and the other teapot was empty. I said, this is a bit like having tea on telly. And it just got very, very surreal around this tea thing. And then finally, about half an hour into the panel, up came the cake stand with the scones and the clotted cream and the jam.
Except it wasn't clotted cream, was it?
No, I thought it was ice cream. It set the tone for, and I've had a lot of feedback on that panel because it was one, obviously, that I did. And I think people loved it.
Mm.
And you had Katie going down, laying on the floor, doing her impersonation of Chris Chapman, filming, zooming up at people and whatever else. And I don't know if you saw it, but
yeah,
I know it went down very well. And people have said some very nice things to me about how it's clearly obvious that Katie and myself have a great rapport.
Mm.
And we have known each other for a long time now. And we do, I think I said, well, I don't know what I've said it for, but anyhow, she's been round to our house and whatever. And I genuinely, we really are good friends. We don't live in each other's pockets, especially as I live in Staffordshire now. But she is something special. And as long as I keep doing the Capital, I will try and get her to every single one. She's done the first 5. I hope she does the 6th, because I thought it was just lovely.
And during the Q&A, someone in the audience very tactfully brought up the subject of Stuart Bevan.
That was the first question from the audience. I'd actually said to Katie, do you want to start with that? She said, before we went on, she said, no, we'll do that later on. So when it went out to the audience and the question came in, it was perfect timing. It was probably halfway through. So that worked out ideally. I didn't have to ask. It came from the punters. It zoomed by. I could spend 3 hours on a stage with Katie and we'd never dry up and we'd just go from this to that to the other. And this, as I said before, this was a different one. This was the first time at the Capitol we've had a one-on-one. Each one's been themed before, whether it was with Stu with about the Green Death and Whole Wheel, or whether it was the unit one, the first one with Daphne Ashbrook or the Irish Wild Time. So this was just to make a change again, one-on-one. And my plans for next year, which I'm not going to reveal, will be something different again.
Yeah, she's always brilliant value, isn't she, Katie? I can't believe that she got there about midday, didn't she?
Leo got a cab to Crawley Station. Her train was due in 11:13. It turned up 5 minutes late. They got a cab back. He basically went with her all day and then saw her back to the station about 6 o'clock.
So her signing started at 12 and she was still signing, I think, 2 hours later when she was due on stage.
And someone had told me that she was actually kneeling on the floor signing, and I've seen a photograph of that.
Yes. So.
Talking of Q&As, I forgot to mention that on the very first panel we worked out for the 5th Capital Convention running, John Hughes got the first question of the convention in.
Oh, John Hughes. Oh, lovely John. There are 5 people who turn up on a Thursday, and John is one of them, and myself and Leo are 2 others. And Alistair's always there on a Thursday. It's great.
Mark and I then disappeared again. Who was the first autograph that we got, Mark?
Katie's was the lunchtime break. Camille's was the afternoon break, if you got that.
I also queued for Graham Harper's and Eric Saywood's.
That's why we ended up missing, I think, the Devious panel with David V. Clarke.
No, I thought you saw the Devious.
Well, I think
panel,
I saw the last 10 minutes, I think, which had...
No, you would have seen it because we weren't getting anything signed.
Yeah, but I had no idea at the end of it what Devious was any more than I had when I started, so I didn't see it. The only thing I saw was the end of it when they played the John Pertwee behind the scene clips.
No, that wasn't John Pertwee behind the scenes. That was trailer for episode 4. The John Pertwee behind the scenes was as part of the Saturday Night Entertainment.
Oh, that was it. Yes, of course. Yes.
I tell you what. Again, I had someone say to me, "Oh, a couple of people have said, why have you got these people as guests?" And this, and I've really bought into Devious since they started working on it again. And I mean, you think when they first talked about it, it was 30 years ago. The majority of the filming was done in 1995. Mm. It's had a tortured development, but they've brought out the first episode in 2020, the second episode last year. Now this is the third episode. And they've got 3 more to go in there. They're basically, because the work that goes into it, and that episode was 35 minutes long. And if you haven't seen it, watch it on YouTube, because it's got the sort of Dalek production line that the BBC would die for. And the effort they put into it on no budget, it's incredible. So the episode went down well. We had a 20-25 minute panel afterwards just discussing briefly. And I was delighted there were a good number of people in the auditorium for it. And they're great guys, Stephen, David, Ashley, Mark, and Anthony, whose health didn't allow him to be with us. But they contributed greatly to the event, and I was delighted. And we plan to screen the premiere of episode 4 at the Capitol next year, probably as part of Crown Imperial. Then you had the wonderful, gorgeous, incredible Camille Kadjuri to finish the day.
It was like a sparkler. A little ball of energy coming into the hall, isn't she?
She's new Who's Manning. That's what people have said to me. She really is. New Who's equivalent to Katie Manning.
Yes, I was about to say that, but the only reason I didn't say, because I thought it might be a bit presumptuous, because I don't really know Katie.
No, but she's got the same energy. She's got the same rapport with people. She's brilliant talking to people, whether it's one-on-one or to an audience. Again, the only panels I saw were the two that I interviewed. But I know how well she went down. I know how busy she was at the signings and at the photos and things like that. I'm delighted. I think I said before the event, it took me a month to get her. Once we'd lost Janet Fielding, it took me a month, but the negotiations went well. And I am so pleased we had Camille at her first Society event. For me, it was an there were a lot of highlights of the day, but in some ways, having her as the final panel was just perfect. And then, of course, we had something else afterwards, which no one knew about. After Camille's panel, I came up and said closing comment for the day. And then I went into saying how shocked we all were that Chris Achilleos died just before.
Of course, yes.
And we went into Tasha. I'd invited her to join us. Mm. She came up.
Chris's wife.
Because we were going to give Chris an outstanding contribution award in 2020, and he was going to launch his book Clack at the event. Obviously that will change, and then we know what happened. And then Edward Russell, who had curated the Target exhibition in 2016, gave the most wonderful speech and then presented the award to Tasha, who gave another wonderful speech. Edward said afterwards, and Edward Russell has done a lot over years, as we know, Edward said that it was the greatest honour he's ever had to present the Outstanding Achievement Award to Tasha, who was receiving it on behalf of Chris. So it's very, very special and quite emotional, actually. But there's no wrong. We can have fun and laughs and this and that, but nothing wrong with a bit of emotion.
It wasn't
contrived. We wanted to make sure that Chris's contribution was fully recognised, and, you know, to give support to Tasha. And she, as I said to her, she's welcome back next year at any time. She's a member of the Doctor Who family. She'll always be welcome at the Capitol.
You bumped into her, didn't you, Mark, at one point in the hotel and had a word with her?
Later in the evening, yeah. Because, as I said before, at my first ever Capitol that I went to, when I was standing outside, and I was quite nervous. I'd never, my first ever Doctor Who convention, in fact. And I was very nervous, very shy. And I was just standing outside having a fag. And this woman came outside and just started chatting to me, extremely friendly. And turns out that, she was Tasha Achilleos. And she was, like I say, just very friendly, very welcoming. Encouraged me to, when I went back in, to go and talk to Chris, and said, no, do come over and come and see us. Come say hello to me and I'll introduce you to Chris. And it'll be nice. So for somebody who was quite anxious and quite shy and nervous on my first thing, That was a very big thing, and I appreciate that a lot. So I got to thank her for that. And so it was lovely to see her there, and it was nice to get a chance to say thank you to her. And,
I always say we're going to have surprises. Mm. People can probably guess that there's normally one at the end of each day, but I don't believe that anyone who wasn't in the know would have expected that. Mm. So it was nice to have I loved it, and it was a great way to finish the day's events, I thought.
So then we all disappeared off for an evening meal. Mark and I, after our experience at the McDonald's drive-in, decided actually the bar prices don't look that expensive for food, so we...
No, when you start going native, don't you, after you've been there for 12 hours or so, you start looking at the prices and start thinking, oh, these are starting to look normal now. And I didn't think it was too badly priced. The cost of the beers there weren't any more expensive at the bar than they were in my local pub.
You just had to try and get one. I think we just have to say that the hotel failed miserably on both Saturday night and Sunday night, and in fact, Saturday and Sunday. And given the briefings I had with them, I've had very strong words at the debrief, and they need to buck their ideas up next year completely. For example, I didn't see the auction on the Saturday night because I couldn't even contemplate getting to the bar to get something to eat. So I actually went and ordered food after the first, because we started 25 minutes late the evening, 8:55 instead of 8:30. I saw the first part of the cosplay, then came out and said, I've ordered food. Now, by the time I got my food, it was 10 o'clock and the auction was going on. Then by the time I finished it, it was 25 past 10. And then at 20 to 11, which was spot on the hour and three quarter schedule, we saw people coming out.
Didn't one of the bar staff slam your drink down in front of you, Mark?
Yeah, that was on the Friday night, though. One of the bar staff obviously had enough. And I think they'd been mucked about by management, to be honest. And asked for a Coke for you, didn't I? And she just slammed... that was it. She just slammed it down on the bar, didn't ask if I wanted any ice in it or anything, just slammed it down and wandered off.
There was a lovely woman serving in the bar on a Saturday afternoon during all the panels, who, when I was ordering, just whispered to me, this sort of group that you're with. And I said, oh, no, it's only a couple of mates on that table. And she said, no, this group of all these people here today. I said, oh, yeah, how long are you here for? And I said, oh, it's about 6 o'clock tomorrow. She said, oh, right. So it sounds as if they were frazzled just as well. But that's when we ended up all around a bar table with Gareth Cavanagh, Des Skin,
Ian Winterton and Sean Mason.
Oh, the whole cutaway crew.
Yeah.
And Stephen Wyatt. Here's an example of how it can be just a matter of pure, like a lucky dip if you miss something important, because Stephen had to miss a conversation with me and Mark just so he could go and dine with Rob Sherman that night. I bet he was kicking himself.
I tell you what, Rob Sherman had a brilliant time. He was on fantastic form. He just, all right, he's a writer, he's done this, he's done that. He's now the Chancellor or Visiting Chancellor of the University of Lincoln. He's a Doctor Who fan who was having a fantastic time with other Doctor Who fans. And I know he was just so grateful to be there. So it's wonderful if the guests feel like that.
We heard many eyebrow-raising and eye-watering anecdotes, didn't we, Mark? And rumours, which we were...
oh, yeah.
We were told on the understanding that we wouldn't ever repeat them.
Until I dig out the Spider-Man music, that is.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Once again, I stayed up far too late. I think it was 2 a.m. by the time I got to my room on Saturday night, Sunday morning.
And then it was off to Crown Imperial, which was the capital's first cosplaying competition. What did we have? We had a woman as Maran, didn't we?
We had Missy, the fourth Doctor from season 18, the Brigadier, Ohila, Priestess of Calm.
The third Doctor.
Yeah, another third Doctor, Sarah Jane, and you know what? I can't remember. But anyway, it's interesting that he who must be obeyed within the Doctor Who Appreciation Society said to me after the weekend, that because he wasn't keen on my idea of having a cosplay contest, and he is now completely converted to how good it goes.
Oh, they were brilliant, all of the people.
And we had a pre-judging at 6:30, and I sat in there. I didn't get involved in it, I just sat. But the judges were talking to them or whatever. Then you had the parade, and then you had the decision. And it was a unanimous decision, I know that. And I think Hugh Dennis as the Brig was brilliant. And then he came out with his Inferno Alternative Earth Brig on the Sunday. I mean, he was the bee's knees, basically.
Well, while everyone else was admiring Hugh, Mark spent a lot of the weekend having a long conversation on and off with Hugh's partner Lisa, didn't you, Mark? Getting the real skinny about how growing a brigadier moustache over a year can affect a domestic relationship.
Yeah, she's ever so friendly as well. I was chatting to her and she was saying this year he's actually grown the brigadier moustache for real. And she said she hates it. She absolutely loathes that beard. And the only way she'd let him do it is if on the night of the cosplay, after he'd done the cosplay competition on the Saturday, he had to shave it off. So he did that and he came back on the Sunday, came downstairs with his moustache shaved off. And obviously, as the brigade leader from Inferno.
With the makeup that makes it look like you've got a big scar. I mean, yes. Talk about... I was delighted with how it went. As I've kept on saying, it's the first time in the Society's 46 years that we've done such a thing.
Mm.
And we're very much intending to hold another one next year.
And there was another guy in the bar who was playing the Mordrin Brigadier, who someone said, oh, can I take a picture of you and Hugh together? Mark and I were thinking, no, the Blinovich limitation effect. Thank God for social distancing.
I don't think there was a lot of social distancing over the weekend, to be honest.
Do you know who the chap was who was playing a very convincing First Doctor with that sort of gnarled walking stick?
No, I know who you mean. I know who you mean. I don't know who he is. But I have a funny feeling that in 2019, when I was waiting for a train for the last bit of the journey to get to Timelash in Kassel, Germany, he was on the platform with me, dressed as the First Doctor.
Yes, he told us he played in... I've done this in Germany, he said.
Ah, so he was the same guy.
Yeah.
I've got photos of him, but I don't know who he is. You know, people don't want to go in for the competition. That's fair enough. It's a shame, but, you know, we had 8 very good contestants and it went down well. So there we go.
Well, we got him a snap of him with Mark next to the Space Museum Dalek so that we could tweet it as a sort of I am the master, I fooled them all thing. Which got a huge reception, didn't it, Mark, on Twitter?
Yeah.
Wasn't Dalek AD beautiful? A dead planet.
Yeah.
Copy a thing. It's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of wonder. It's the original. And it's just... I pushed it through the hotel twice, both days when we were opening up. And it's like, yeah. A Dalek will always get people talking, won't it?
Hayden, I hope you're not feeling too left out, but are you there?
I'm just listening. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Say the occasional sort of interesting
What, in a Billy style, you mean?
My dear boy.
Now, being fans of Blake 7, and we read that day 2 on Sunday would be opening with a presidential address, we were convinced that Tony had done a Servalan and he's planning to overthrow Paul.
As my will, so mote it be.
Windsor.
Do you really think I'd take that chance? No, I wouldn't. Instead of which, we had 3 minutes of Colin.
On screen.
And then at the end, he revealed that he is the first confirmed guest for next year.
Which is the 6 decades.
The Capitol 6 decades, yeah.
Mm.
It was nice of him to do that. And it also meant that although most of it was similar, because on the first day you had the Troughton voiceover, calling the Capitol,
yes.
Can you hear me? This is the Doctor. And then you had Colin second day. So that was nice. I have to say, Karen Davis does brilliant videos. And she did the...
She was lovely, Karen, yes.
Yeah, and she did the great one at the end as well. So.
Oh, her editing's fabulous, yeah.
Although I understand she's one of this bizarre clique within Dwas who are these panto obsessives. I don't know how they get in there.
No. Ridiculous, isn't it? I said... That's a cue. I said to Dickie Gauntlet on the Sunday, I said, Dickie, I'm going to have a sit down and a chat with you about pantomime because I wrote this amount, I did this, that. And that was the last time I saw Dickie. Never got the chance.
Slightly our fault because after he did his panel, because he did his panel with Bonnie Langford and Stephen Wyatt on the morning of the Capitol on Sunday. And I think he managed to nip off to the green room to have some food. And then shortly after that, well, we interrupted and whisked him away for a quick interview. Because we were watching him be interviewed, and we thought, well, obviously, if it's possible to interview Bonnie Langford, that'd be great. But I can't help but think that that Dickie Gauntlet's the one for us. And so it was.
So after Colin's presidential address from Beyond the Screen, we had 24 Carat, which was the panel with Richard Gauntlet, who is the Tetrap from Time of the Rani, who actually turns over the Doctor's body in the TARDIS, just as the journey of Jason takes place, isn't he? Bonnie Langford, we all know who Bonnie is, of course, and Stephen Wyatt, the writer of Paradise Towers and Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Yeah, and unbelievably, my Tetrap gun and my Paradise Towers can crossbow, the actual props from the telly show, I was unable to locate them in storage, so I was unable to bring them.
And as I said to you, I think, on the day, Mark, I have, or at least had, a Tetrap ankle bracelet, and I cannot find for love nor money. These things are worth fortunes now.
Tell us something about what it was like with Bonnie, Tony.
Bonnie turned up exactly on time, said hello, had a brief chat with her in the green room. She was whisked away to her panel. The first half of her panel was just her and Karen, and then the Dickie and Stephen joined her. I was hoping to have a chat with Bonnie. I did have another chat with her, which is when I said, goodbye, Bonnie. Thank you for coming. She was snowed under. She is the ultimate professional. Do you know, you take your autograph queue is like this. Oh, it's not a problem. Your photograph queue is this. Can you do this, that and the other? She works so hard. And I think, I tell you what, actually, someone said to me, just juxtaposing Bonnie to the hotel. So I read a comment. Someone said, the queue to get an autograph from Bonnie Langford was shorter than the queue to get a pint on the Sunday lunchtime in the bar. But she was magnificent, absolutely magnificent. And I've done some research. 35 years since she joined Doctor Who, this was only the second ever society event she has attended. The previous one was Panopticon 2000. I didn't research this till after, so it makes me even happier that we managed to get her. And she was originally going to be a guest on the Saturday, and then less than 2 months before, we had to switch her to the Sunday because she had a commitment that came up on the Saturday. But I was so thrilled and so thrilled at the response she got. Two people, Ian McCann, Howard Hayes, they flew over. They flew into JFK on Thursday. They got an overnight flight from JFK to Heathrow, landed about 11:30 on Friday morning. And they flew back to America on the Tuesday morning from Heathrow. They both flew over to see Bonnie Langford because she was meant to be at Gallifrey and she cried off. And she hasn't done an American event in something like 20 years. So they flew 4,000 miles from where they're Howard's in Utah. So it could be like 4,500 miles just to come. And the main thing was to see Bonnie Langford, to meet Bonnie Langford. That shows you how big a draw she is. This is the thing, because Bonnie's career, she's in her mid-late 50s now. And her career's been nearly 50 years, hasn't it? She is, I would say, probably a genuine A-lister. So for our little convention, to have her and to have her absolutely go down a storm was just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So pleased. Delighted.
We only queued for Eric, Graham and Katie on the Saturday. How did you feel the queuing for the photos and the autographs went? Because you had quite a strict one-way social distancing.
It went loopy on the Sunday, which led to us pushing the schedule back 15 minutes. Because what happened was, to get the group photo, which is the five companions, we had to take two or three of them from the autographs. I'd allowed 15 minutes for this. Those photos went on for nearly 40 minutes, which is why the queues were so long. So the afternoon should have started at 1:20 and it started at 1:35. But I knew we could squeeze. I knew we could squeeze. Even with the additional little 15-minute panel of the two Susans, we could just, you know, cut 5 minutes here, do this, do that. The second break we cut by 10 minutes. So there was always a way. But no, the queues were too long on the Sunday. But that was the only way we could allow a five companions photo shoot. And the two Susans as well, I think. So there we go. Blu-ray and animated delights.
Yes, well, we just about 2 minutes after we decide we're going to have to miss this in order to fit our interviews in, we got a text from Hayden saying, you must make sure you see the DVD and Blu-ray panel.
Yeah.
And so I think we texted something deceitful back, like, oh, yes, we'll make our best effort.
In fact, I'll tell you what I'd said. I asked Edward to do that like I asked Edward to do the Eagle Moss panel, because of being brand manager, he knows all about these things. That was originally scheduled for 45 minutes, and I actually said before it started, we'll stretch this to 55, so the break won't be till 12, for the simple reason that I knew that Chris Chapman had brought footage, Richard Latto had brought footage about the Wurzel thing, Gary was probably bringing footage about Abominable Snowman. And there's no way you could do that all in 45 minutes. So I think we had about 10 minutes of footage alone. So that's what started pushing things back. But what the plan always was, the 11:50 autograph session for Jill, Bonnie and Roberta, that was always going to start early. So it still started early. But I did actually see some of the Blu-ray and Animated Delights panel. It was really interesting, although Mr. Chapman would not give a date for when season 22 is out, and Gary wouldn't give a date for when Abominable Snowman's out, probably because they don't actually know still.
That's one of the panels that I really wish that I'd been there to see, because I'm very interested in the whole production of those two projects and the way they hopefully will one day merge together with the animations going into the collection box sets. But I think in the end, I just took to sort of trawling desperately through Twitter to see if anyone, if there had been any sort of like little snippets of news to come out of it. But like with the future of the animations or the future of the collections anyway, because I'd heard a rumour somewhere that the actual distribution of these things have been affected by the war in Ukraine. But I don't know whether that's just a rumour or not.
Well, apparently they're basically produced in Poland and there's a shortage of raw materials or something. So it's June the 20th is the latest date.
Right. Okay.
So that was Chris Chapman, Lee Binding, Richard Latto, and I'm not sure who this Gary Russell guy is. Who? Who? Gary who? So we had to drop that because we had what turned out to be just over an hour-long interview with Des Skin planned, where we thought, there's a nice settee and a couple of armchairs at the back of the restaurant there. Well, that'd be perfect. And then in the middle of the interview, they started setting the tables. So if you hear during the recorded interview a lot of a sound of cups and saucers and silverware being put down, we do apologise. But if you also hear the background of a few people talking, that's an honour, because that was Uncle Terence's family, who were a few tables away. Mark and I, on our lanyards this year, we had event team, and we were thinking, oh God, you know, this is very makes us feel very important, but hope that no one sees them and decides to ask us a question. The only people in the whole weekend who saw them and came over to ask us a question were Terence's family. When they arrived. So we said, oh, we don't know. We dashed off to fetch Leo.
No, we didn't say we didn't know. We said, no, certainly, we'll get someone to help you. Just wait here a minute. And off we went on our errand.
So Elsa phoned me when they'd got there and I was tied up. So she was probably going to say they were there, which I knew they were, yes. But it was just... And I was keeping them in the loop that we were going to be running 15 minutes late or whatever. But anyhow, we are jumping the gun, because after the break, we had the wonderful Graham Cole, OBE. Did you see him? Talk to him at all?
Well, we saw the end of his just after we finished talking with Des. So the Des and Gareth interview went really well. Because it's an hour long, what we'll do is we'll probably put that out as a separate podcast next time. So that went really well. And then we managed to get in for the last 5 or 10 minutes of Graham Cole's panel. What were you going to say about it, Tony?
I didn't see the panel. I just know that I'd never met the man before. When we signed him up, which was fairly late, he asked me to phone him, so I did. He is a force of nature. He's the most wonderful person. He offered to help out in the auction, which he did. It was him and Gary who did brilliantly. And with the auction and Alistair's raffle combined, I think we raised around about £3,200.
Oh, wow, wow.
That's good.
Which is tremendous. I think Graham went down a storm. He's another one, perhaps like Peter Purvis, like Katie Manning. You could have him on stage for 2 hours and you'd still not get anywhere near through what you would want to talk about, you know?
Mm.
Just a top man.
John Hughes loved it, didn't he?
Yeah. He said, any questions? John puts his hand up. He says, you, sir. Oh, you look like my accountant. I think it's John's proudest moment. But I've seen loads of people saying on social media, oh, he was a lovely guy.
I'll tell you something about Graham. He messaged me to say that one of the people who'd bought a photograph from him, he'd had a pen issue and basically a Sharpie had run out of ink halfway through, so he had to redo it. And so he asked me if I could put out a tweet saying, if you're the person who that happened to, please contact us and he'll arrange to send a new one. So someone has got back to us, but as far as I can tell, they posted that was me, but I tweeted them by direct message and they haven't got back. But that's the sort of thing, you know, he's interested in.
Graham was, of course, I think, was he? He was, wasn't he? He was Tony Stamp in the bill?
He was. He went to the same school as my mum as well.
1,202 episodes of the bill he was in. We did a little photo shoot for the hotel for them to do something on their social media, and it was with Graham and Ash, the assistant food and beverage manager. Well, I said, I'm going to do this photo with you, 11:40 on the Sunday, and it's going to be with Graham Cole, who played Tony Stamping. He said, oh, I've watched every single episode. I love it. And he was absolutely made up to meet Graham Cole. It, the best thing that's happened to him probably in his entire career within food and beverage.
And then a very special event next was the long-anticipated Terence Dicks Award for Writers.
I was delighted with that. I said we got Elsa, Stephen and John up on stage. Unfortunately, Oliver was unwell and couldn't join us. I said my bit, then Mr. Winter himself read the citation. And as soon as he said about he appeared in the ITV in 1979, the ITV version of, or whenever it was, of the Famous Five, you could hear this penny drop there, however many hundreds of people were in the auditorium. Everyone then knew who was going to get it. But that was good because it's worth reading through.
They're all trying to think, oh, who played Julian?
And I sure saw they were all thinking Dick.
Gary came up, received it from Elsa, who said, and she'd said to me before, shall I make a speech? I said, entirely how you feel like at the time, Elsa. And then what was lovely is in Gary's response, he said that Terence, when Gary was 18, Terence was the first person he ever interviewed at a convention on stage. And he worked with him and through the decades. And then when they decided they were not going to do novelizations of Doctor Who, but of the Sarah Jane Adventures, Gary and RTD agreed that the person who wrote the first book had to be Terence. There was never any doubt. And the fact that Gary regarded Terence as a mentor and as a friend, I thought was lovely. But, you know, the executive made the decision. For me, Gary ticked all the boxes. If you read what the criteria were, Gary's done it all in decades worth of stuff in Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And he's still doing it now. So I loved it. It didn't go on for too long. It was about 15 minutes or so, wasn't it? Mm. But I was originally planning it to be the conclusion on the Sunday. But then Elsa asked if we could do it about 2 o'clock, which worked really well because it gave you gave you something very special in before we headed in towards the finale of the weekend.
Gary retweeted our tweet where there's a picture of him receiving the award with a little bronze figurine of the Master.
It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous, the figurine.
We retweeted it saying, one evil mastermind presented to another.
I tell you what, he tweeted it himself, and within an hour it had had over 300 likes, the photo he put up, so... Well deserved, I think.
I mean, Gary and a friend, I regard Terence Dicks as an old drinking buddy.
There you go. One of the things I said in my speech, which was based around the speech I gave at his memorial in 2019, when Elsa asked me to read a eulogy. And one of the things I said was at that first Capital in 2016, he turned up and Mrs. J was running the green room and wouldn't allow alcohol in. And he was looking like very sad. So I said to my wife, I'm going to go and get him a pint because he's Terence and he's the exception to the rule. And she didn't disagree with that. So we all have so many great memories of the man. And so it was lovely. It was lovely.
Was that possibly the swankiest green room you ever had for Capital?
Yeah, because it's the club lounge.
Yeah, so it's a little lovely, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The room we were going to have is being used for, they got another year's contract for COVID testing.
Oh, right. Yes, I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, so I've said I want the club lounge next year as well because I was concerned about the steps, having to use the steps for elderly guests. So, no, it's very nice indeed.
Then we, round about this time, after this, we had our interview with Dickie Gauntlet, who we'll play in a few minutes. I think we're asking him if he actually knew anyone in the green room. And he was saying, oh yeah, I went straight in and I saw Peter. And I thought, I've not seen him since 20 years ago. He directed me in a panto.
Yeah, Pete did that. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, we should have Tony here next to us for this.
This is the thing. I would love to. And Graham Cole has appeared in two pantos with Dickie at a Theatre Royal Norwich as well. So they're all thick as thieves, you know.
And in fact, we will play the interview with Richard Gauntlett now. So we're here again on Sunday lunchtime at the Capitol, and we're speaking to Richard Gauntlett of Tam and the Rowney fame. Now, it occurs to me, Richard, when I saw that you were coming to the Capitol, I thought, that's not that Richard Gauntlett, is it? So I remember about 8 or 9 years ago seeing you in a very good production of Yeoman of the Guard at Buxton.
That was me.
Yes,
that was me. Yeah.
And were you also on some of the backstages doing a sort of magic act with that?
I do a variety act. I started in variety, basically. So I came through summer season and panto and stuff like that. But I trained as a singer, so I go back to opera when required. And Gilbert Sullivan is ideal because the comedy parts in Gilbert Sullivan were written for a variety performer, George Goldsmith, etc., etc. So I went back to the National Gilbert Sullivan Opera Company to play the comic parts in all the Gilbert and Sullivans. In fact, I've done all but one with them. Yeoman of the Guard is probably my favourite because it's got the greatest parts W.S. Gilbert ever wrote, Jack Point. And I've done that 5 times. I've played Jack Point 5 times.
I'm a complete softy for the for the final scene.
And he's got to die. I remember doing it for a director once who said, I don't want him to die at the end. I said, well, you don't want me to play the part then. No, he's got to fall insensible. I think it says in the libretto, he falls insensible. But I think he's got to die.
And then, having thought back, I thought, that's not the only stuff scene. Then I realised I actually did see you in Barnum at the Manchester Opera House in the early to mid 80s.
I think it 84. Yeah, 84.
Yeah, something like that.
Thinking
about Barnum, it seems quite an appropriate template for much of your creativity because you're not a straight actor just a comic actor, are you? I think you said almost musical.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say 50 years ago I'd have been much bigger. Much bigger. No, I came up through variety, and I've worked with all the variety performers from, I did the last Carry On show. The last Carry On show there was, the live show, that I was in that. So I've gone from Carry On all the way through to the modern day, and Doctor Who was one of the things I always wanted to do. I've really lived the professional life that I've done everything that I wanted to do. I've done 6 West End shows, I've done film, I've done opera, I've done grand opera. I played Puck at the Fenice in Venice, the Golden Theatre. So I've done pretty well everything, and I like to keep going. As a writer, I still write panto every year. I've written the last 2 series of the Sooty Show for ITV.
Oh, really?
I still write for TV, and I write. I've written for comics and BBC TV, and I tend to keep busy, which is nice.
So it's always nice to hear in one of those panels that you're actually someone who, as a kid, was a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
Pertwee,
I suppose. Yeah, probably the end of Troughton as well, probably a little bit. But Pertwee was my Doctor Who. And also, I mean, Pertwee was an incredible performer. When you go back through the radio work, you know, the Navy Lark and all that sort of stuff.
Quite a variety performer himself, isn't he?
Yeah, he was a brilliant variety performer. And a panto star, I mean, you know, he used to do panto. Yeah, and the film work he did, you know, he was in the Carry On films as well.
Yeah.
So he was in Screaming, wasn't he, I believe?
Oh, we've even got a character in our podcast based on the old soothsayer from Carry On.
Yeah.
We'll have to wipe that out in case our listeners realise, do you mean he's not real?
But he turned up everywhere, Pertwee. I mean, he was fine. And I did a couple of stunts in Words of Gummidge. I stunt doubled Barbara Windsor when she went down a hill. and that's the first time I met Barbara, and I worked with Barbara a lot, you know, in variety. She was a figurehead.
The ship's figurehead. Last night they were showing about 10 minutes of back scene footage of John Pertwee.
It was a fan film. Some people made fan film called Devious, but they had unused footage from that, didn't they, John?
And he was essentially saying, this scene, John, we will film you talking to so-and-so doing this. And he's saying, oh, where do you want me to look? am I supposed to be happy here or sad when I see this? And it was very interesting. You think, because he comes on in Doctor Who and he's called a suave and he's the master of what he's doing, but then he's quite
Well,
I think that was everything he's doing.
In the Three Doctors, there was that tension between Patrick Troughton, who wanted to ad lib and would sort of memorise the script, but then just kind of go, get close to it, and John Pertwee, who fastidiously followed everything that was written down, and there was a bit of tension, I think, between them at that time, although they became great friends, didn't they? Can you tell us your John Pertwee anecdote that you mentioned?
I did the original Barnum, but I also then toured it later on in the mid-90s with Paul Nicholas playing the lead, a lot slower. And I covered him as well. I played the ringmaster as opposed to the original. I played the white-faced clown. But in that show was a guy called Graham Smith who'd done the live Doctor Who show. And so had done it with Pertwee.
The Ultimate Adventure.
Yeah. And so had done it with Pertwee. And I came backstage at the Alexandra in Birmingham. And I was walking backstage and John Pertwee was sat backstage waiting for Graham to go out for dinner. And I went, oh, hello. He said, Richard Gauntlet. I went, yes. He said, you were in Doctor Who. I said, I was. He said, so was I. So we got chatting and then we went out to dinner. So, I had a brilliant evening with him. I mean, I really did. What a fantastic, impressive man he was. Everything about him was impressive. Every word he said was impressive. I loved him. Loved it to death.
Do you ever lose the slight thrill of that when someone even more famous recognises you?
No, you never lose. No, never, ever, ever. I mean, it's amazing. You know, when someone you're going up to says, Richard Gauntlet, that is incredible. It really is.
Walking down the corridor earlier and passed Peter Purvis and he nodded and smiled at me. I had to be brought back to life with oxygen.
Today when he came into the room, Peter, now I don't think I've seen Peter since 1989. When he directed me in Panto in Bath, he directed me in Panto in Bath, because I remember, and he walked into the room and went, hello, Richard. I went, oh, Peter, right like that. So it's happened today, right? But I didn't realise he's seen me in Panto since, and I didn't know he'd been in the audience. He said, I also saw you in Norwich. So it was great to catch up with him, because I remember went in Bath to see, he came back to see the show, and he left his two dogs in my room. Now, in those days, he had those huge Newfoundland, you know, those huge black dogs, and left them in my dressing room. And I was just sitting in the corner like this. Yeah, I look after your dogs. These two sort of small ponies, no, big ponies, sitting in my room, you know. So, so it's lovely to see Peter. And he was my Blue Peter.
Well, that Blue Peter is very much like a doctor, and you have your doctor and your... I was
exactly.
Peter Purvis, John Noakes, and Leslie Judd with Valerie Stingleton still coming in once or twice.
That's right, so you must have been saying similar to me,
I'm slightly late, I caught the tail end of Peter Purvis and John Noakes and Leslie Judd, Simon Groom and Peter Duncan. How did you come to being Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Roger Rabbit was, that was a surprise, that was, because I was working, I was advertising slippers in Hamleys, where I was wearing, Harrods, where I was putting these slippers on and walking a tightrope across the ground floor. Over people.
I was wondering when you...
Wouldn't be allowed now.
No.
Wouldn't be allowed. So I was doing this, and... in lunchtime, and in those days, you phoned home to get... You didn't know mobiles or anything.
Yeah.
So you phoned home with one of those bleep, 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 bleep to see what was on your Binatone answer machine.
Right.
and there was a message from a choreographer I worked with, a guy called David Tagore, to meet him in a warehouse opposite BBC in Ariel Way. And this hour, I got there in my lunch hour and went in there, and I was met at the door, and I thought... because I knew what sort of work David did, I thought it was a Little and Large Christmas special. Automatically, because I knew they were filming it, and a few mates of mine were dancing it. So I sort of turned up, and it was all these American cars, and the place had been done up, this old warehouse. And I was met at the door, and they said, security's a bit tight, because Mr. Spielberg's on set. I thought, blimey, I mean, his work's gone downhill a bit. He's doing a Little and Large Christmas special. But I walked onto set, and there was this massive toy department. with all these huge props and the, I don't know if you've seen Roger Rabbit, it's the end scene. And basically, Chiguri was choreographing the scene, the end scene, and he was doing a Portuguese commercial and they were running late and he needed someone to leave it with. And they wanted me to do a bit of stunt work at the end, a bit of juggling with cannonballs. And so the next thing I knew, I was standing amongst Steven Spielberg, Bob Zemeckis, Christopher Lloyd, and Bob Hoskins and David Chiguri introducing me, and me going, what's going on here? What are we doing? Because no one had heard of the film, because it was 2 years before it came out, because they were laying all the animation on top. And so for 2.5 weeks, I was working on that, and actually shouting action and things like that, and teaching Bob Hoskins the steps. And dressed as him, and my head was shaved, and I was padded, and it was brilliant.
I was you're a slightly different build,
yeah,
to Bob Hoskins.
But I was picked up. I was picked up at Victoria Station every day. I'm in a limo. They said the quickest way. I was living in Bromley, so the quickest way for me was to get the train straight to Victoria, and then I was picked up and taken to area away. That was the easiest way to do it. So I always made sure I got off the train with someone I knew. And they said, "I'll see you later. I've got this my car." Getting this huge. But I what year was this? I suppose this was late 80s, wasn't it? So I was only sort of 23, 24. But it was amazing. I mean, it really was an amazing experience.
Well, that was a really groundbreaking film, wasn't it, technologically?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I didn't,
live action,
I didn't
along
know
with
who I mean. It's almost... Because you've just come off Back to the Future.
Yeah. So it's almost something you've Mrs. Collins plays now, isn't it, live action?
Yeah.
Together with animated action.
Yeah, I mean, but it was amazing, because it was the first time they'd laid on animation and they moved, they tracked the camera.
Yeah.
So they had to lay it on one cell at a time. Mm. Whereas if you watch Mary Poppins and stuff, when there's animation, the camera never tracks.
Yeah.
It's straight on. Bedknobs and Broomsticks, great film. Yeah. Lovely film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I did that, and no one could believe it.
No.
You know, and I was telling people, this new film, who shot Roger Rabbit. Then they changed the title, and they're like, what'd you do that for?
Well, also, if you tell people you're in this film with Bob Hoskins and there's Bob Zemeckis, then nothing happens for 2 years.
Yeah.
But you must be thinking, he's making
what
all that.
What the hell was Dickie on about?
I think we all know you played the main tetrap in Tanderoni, but you also mentioned earlier, you've actually been asked to do two other Doctor Who's.
Yeah, John Nathan Turner asked me, directly after that, asked me to do the, there was one in a holiday camp.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yeah. Delta of Bannerman.
Yeah. And he asked me, because my face wasn't shown, it meant I could do another one straight away. And we had such a laugh that, Sylvester was in on it as well, and they asked me to do it, but unfortunately I was on tour, and so couldn't do it, and I was like, oh, damn. And then about 4 months later, I was asked to do the circus one.
Great to show.
The Great Show. But again, I
mean, that would have been
ideal
for you.
Well, there was so many people from the original Barnamini.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, well, yes. I knew a lot of people in it. And I couldn't do that either. And I thought, would you believe it? But I was forgotten what I was doing then. I was doing a Saturday morning TV show called It's Wicked.
I was on that for ages.
I was on that every Saturday.
Mm.
So that got in the way. And I was really beaten by my own busyness, which is a bit of a shame, really. Because,
although it's better than not being beaten by none of your Thomas.
Yeah. I was very, I accepted everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was nice to hear that you were actually quite good friends with John Nathan Turner.
We got on quite really well.
As fans, we tend to hear, social media's like these days, a lot of bitching and saying, retrospective stuff. It's nice to hear.
Yeah, and obviously he fell out with certain writers and things like that. Which are going to, well, I think.
He was a very theatrical man.
Yeah.
Mm. Which can wind people up the wrong way. Yeah. Which can wind up people the wrong way. And I can quite see it. And Doctor Who was his. I mean, it was very much his.
Mm.
You know, it belonged and it was controlled by nobody else. Mm. It was his. And that's the sort of, I don't know, I mean, I heard a lot of people fell out with him. Colin Baker wasn't there when I turned him over, to turn into Sylvester. He wasn't there. And I saw him, I did Panto with Colin years later. And I said, we were meant to work together before, but you didn't turn up. What do you mean? And I recounted the story. And he said, well, of course I didn't turn up. Of course I did. That was before, you know. Yeah. Now he says, oh, I'd have been
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, he
I'd
regrets it now,
now.
Doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, of course he does. Of course he does. But...
that's professional pride.
Have you read the book about him?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite sad how at the end he was trying to get away from it, but he'd almost become in a rut. But what I thought was lovely is how it ended with the story of his funeral service. All the people who turned up,
yeah.
Dora Bryan tap dancing in the aisle.
Yeah.
As his coffin went.
It was very theatrical. I mean, everything about his life is theatrical. His house is theatrical. Everything about, and he used to put on panto and all that sort of thing. But he was part of that set in the area that he lived in. And
he really danced on stilts, isn't he?
Yeah. I went down there because there were going to be some monsters, very tall monsters, and he wanted to see what one could do on stilts. It was just something I did. So I, yeah. But he was lovely. But I understood him.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't think a lot of people understood him.
Because of the theatre.
So, thanks very much, Richard.
Pleasure.
Nice to see you.
Then we missed the rebirth. We missed the rebirth of Doctor Who panel because we were interviewing Stephen Wyatt, I think, about his announcement at the Capitol that he's been contracted to write an audio drama of the life of JNT and Gary Downey, which he talked to us about for about 20 minutes in the again in a rather noisy corner of the hotel, and he was very friendly.
I hadn't heard that. Is that for BBC Radio or for?
Well, he
Big
didn't
Finish,
say.
Or?
I don't think he knows. I think he actually said, "Oh, we don't know yet."
Cool.
Yeah, that's what he said. Wasn't
yeah,
sure
I, yet. I think I said it before. Stephen and I are alumni of the same school. Although he was about 11 or 12 years ahead of me. So nice guy.
Yes. So we've just managed to now Stephen Wyatt, the writer of Paradise Towers,
galaxy.
And the rather wonderful Greatest Show in the Galaxy, and we're in the lobby. He's about to be whisked away in a minute. So hello, Stephen.
Hello, guys.
It's lovely to meet you. You've come in with Cutaway Comics, haven't you?
That's right. Yes, because they've done the story based on my Paradise Towers.
But I believe also beyond this, you've made an announcement.
Well, this is just this very week. I've concluded a deal with Barnbeaton Jones and AUK to do an audio drama about John Nathan Turner and Gary Downey, and also about John's career as Doctor Who producer. Has the working title of Me and Him and Who.
Ah, very good.
So that's it's still in very early stages.
Yeah.
It's very early stages.
Is that going to be for Audible?
Well, I'm not quite sure what platform it will end up on.
Okay.
It's AUK who do a lot of stuff. The last big thing they did a piece about Peter Sellers starring Alfie Molina called They Used to Be a Me. So they're out there and they're available. I'm not quite sure how the distribution deals work.
Okay.
It's very early stages. I mean, I've done a sort of outline. So it's about their relationship, but it's also about the various periods in John's career as Doctor Who producer. You know, when he was the bright young thing, he'd sacked Tom Baker, he's going to do great things. The period when it all went wrong with Colin Baker, and the period at the end when, you know, he was out of a job.
Yes.
And looking for other jobs.
Does this mean you're going to have to cast somebody to play Tom Baker?
No, thank God. I don't think... Is Tom Baker available? No.
Exactly.
No, actually, no. It's just a two-hander.
Okay.
So it's John, at the end of his life, sort of looking back at it all.
Okay.
At home with Gary. And then we go back into scenes from the past.
I see.
So it's planned just with the two of them.
Ah, so you've only got to cast those two roles.
Yes, absolutely.
Any ideas yet?
Well, everybody has ideas at the moment. One of them I don't know whether I should say what we did one, the producer one about Rupert Everett.
Right.
I wondered about Matt Lucas. There have been lots of suggestions. In fact, we're still open to suggestions, I think. It's partly to do with availability.
Yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
Who actually has it?
Well, it's a bit like all the speculation as to who's going to be the 14th Doctor.
Exactly. Well, it's not quite as big as that.
Well,
Also, I think it's fair enough. Nobody's going to commit to playing it until they've seen the script.
Yes.
The script is still quite a way off. I shall probably deliver the script in early July, and then I imagine we'll be out in the autumn, depending on the schedules.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed attending conventions? Because you've been to LA recently, haven't you?
No, not recently. I went to 2018. I hadn't been to many. I'd certainly never been anything as big as that.
Yeah.
I came here, not to hear this place, but to the Dwas thing in 2016.
Oh, right, yes.
But I don't do many conventions. Mm. I mean, partly because I'm not asked, but also because I feel I've only got a limited number of things to say.
Yeah.
And there's only so many times to say them. So it's quite nice to be here with, the new Paradise Towers collection.
Mm-hmm.
And also having to say, hey, guys, I'm going to do something new. I'm not just talking about something from 35 years ago.
Mm.
How does a deal like that work? Do you get the idea and then propose it? Or does someone get the idea and then say, oh, so who should we get to write it? Oh, Stephen Wyatt.
Well, this particular occasion, it actually came about that my partner said to me when we were on holiday, why don't you do a one-man show about Drug Day for Turn? And I thought, well, someone must have done it.
Mm.
In fact, various people have floated the idea of doing it. But the first thing I did, I went to Richard Marson. One, because I wanted to be able to make use of his book, but two, because he was the person who would know whether anybody was actually trying to do anything.
Yes.
And he said, there's nothing in the wind at the moment. So then I went straight to Barnaby, who I know. He went straight to AUK. So it was comparatively a very quick deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to provide a synopsis to give the basic idea. But so it's rare to have something happen this quickly, which means, and I also think it's extraordinary that nobody's done it yet.
Well, yes, it's a very colourful life, isn't it? A very theatrical life, as Dickie Gauntlet was saying to us earlier.
Yeah, so it's something you'll come.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, you were next to him on the panel, weren't you? But Dickie Gauntlet had lots of anecdotes, because he knew John personally.
Yeah.
Lots of anecdotes, and from the, which is sometimes unusual in fandom, from the positive side, you can get a number of fans prepared to say, oh, it was a disaster, that. But he's really enthusiastic about him as positive force.
I am. I'm a big fan of John. But there are the darker sides.
Yes.
And basically, it's a sad story.
Yes. Very much so.
His life got chained to Doctor Who. He was never able to get away from it. And when the show ended, he had nowhere to go except organising more Doctor Who.
No, every time he thought he was going to escape, he pulled him back in, didn't he?
Exactly. So that's one of the themes of the play, obviously. So it's trying to do justice to the various parts. I don't want to do a hatchet job because I like him too much.
Of course not.
On the other hand, there's no good story if you don't actually believe, put in the dark of
it's trying
the balance, and trying to be as truthful as
you
can.
And I think the people who are going to be interested in this will know the darker side anyway. I don't think it's something that needs to be...
And the Marston book is very good because it's very even-handed.
Yes, it is.
Even when people contradict each other, he doesn't say this person is right, this person is wrong. It's a marvellous source.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased that he's been very generous. Mm. He's just given it his blessing. I mean, it's not a straight adaptation of his book, but without that body of research, the job would be much, much harder.
Well, you'd have to do all the interviewing yourself.
Well, no longer with us, of course.
Well, yeah, this is true. Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stephen. Didn't scare you away last night, did we, from the...
What happened was I was due to have supper with Rob Sherman.
Jammy.
My mate. And we were having a lovely conversation, but by the time I emerged, I was ready to get to bed.
Is that a friendship that's very much through Doctor Who, you and Rob?
We met at Gallifrey, and he was generous enough to say that I'd be one of the people who encouraged him to become a writer, which was lovely. Not many people are generous in the way Rob is. And so we just have lunch every now and then.
Oh, lovely.
Moan to each other about how horrible it is to be a writer.
Yes.
Because nobody else understands us.
So we unfortunately missed the Rebirth of Doctor Who panel with Paul Cornell, David Hankinson and Robert Sherman. And then what happened was that I thought was a very sophisticated bit of organisation, which was the Doctor Who Progeny panel, followed by the governor panel, whereby, first of all, we had Jill Curzon and Roberta Tovey together.
Yeah.
Talking about their, obviously, their lives in the Dalek Mania movies. Then Jill Curzon left and was replaced by Carol Ann Ford, and you could have the two Susans.
Yeah.
And then Roberta left and was replaced by Peter Purvis, which made it very elegant that by the time you asked Peter to present Carol Ann Ford with a Lifetime Achievement Award, the only other person on the panel was someone who already had one.
I had primed Peter on that. He received his at the Capitol for the way it worked. I suddenly thought, let's get the two Susans together, and Carol had agreed and Roberta had agreed. I had the idea on the Saturday, but basically I wrote the plan and the timings on the back of the proverbial fag packet, but it all worked out really well.
Carol Ann and Peter mainly talked about their dogs, didn't they, throughout the...
Yes.
That's fine.
It's weird, isn't it? But if you're a member of the Dwas, there probably isn't a single anecdote you've not heard 100 times before, is there? So what's exciting for it is not, oh, we're hearing about things we've heard about the Doctor Who, but it's maybe dogs, but it's, oh my God, it's Susan and Stephen talking about them.
I love getting panels where you have guests you've seen before, but not together. I've never seen Carol and Peter together. Going back to other Capitals, I'd never seen the first one. We had Mark Strickson and Nicola Bryant together. I don't think I've ever seen Graham Harper and Eric Saward together. And certainly not Jill and Roberta, and then obviously never the two Susan. So I like to get people that you might have seen before, although with Jill and Roberta, that's very rare. But to get them together, I just think it really works because you get a different dynamic. And of course, with Carol and Peter, you've got people who both massively pro William Hartnell. And Peter would say, yeah, he had this issue, but they both loved him. Therefore, you're coming from the very beginning of his era towards the end. I know Peter didn't leave at the very end, but so you're covering basically the first three seasons, just about, and just the way the program changed even during that time. I didn't see the panel myself, unfortunately.
That was interesting because our two interviewees that were putting out in this podcast, Richard and Stephen, were both hugely pro-JNT. I think they're both, well, certainly Richard was a personal friend of his, and Stephen was.
I think you know me, that I've been a defender of John for many years. He was not a man without his shortcomings or flaws, but he was fundamentally a good man. And of course, we had a little bit of a JNT thing going on in the Space Museum with the photo collection.
Yes, we popped into that.
Unfortunately, by the time we made it down, I think they were starting to pack up, weren't they, down there?
The lighting in the Shepperton Suite, which is where we held it, was poor, and it affected it. And it didn't, because we had to get that room, and it was right the other side of the bar. It was very much isolated from the rest of the event. So it didn't quite go as I had hoped. I hope people enjoyed it, and I hope the Dalek drew people in. What about that wonderful copy of the typeface that was on the music stand? That was it was the nearest we could get to what it looked like in episode one of the Space Museum in April 1965. So I was very pleased with that. Barry Moore did that. I was very pleased with it indeed.
And then we concluded with the most shocking event of the entire convention, which was we actually finished on time, didn't we?
You know what? We finished 2 minutes late. But given that we had, at the end of the panel, we had the presentation to Carol.
Yeah.
We had my farewell speech, although that was no more than a minute. And then you had the 4 minutes of film at the end. We finished at 6:17 instead of 6:15. So we were running late, but we squeezed and we got an extra little panel in and we squeezed it. And we just, as you said, those two panels, the way it was one on, one off, one on, one off. So you had Edward doing the first one, myself doing the second, and Karen doing the third. And it was like a relay almost, wasn't it?
Worked very well. And I think you always say this, don't we? But it's actually true that unless they're just extremely fine actors, it's nice how Carolyn actually looked quite overwhelmed at getting the award.
She genuinely was. Her agent, Rob Crane, he'd known about it since 2019. And we kept it quiet and we kept it quiet. And every so often he would say, oh, no, I guarantee you she has no idea. So she genuinely didn't. Obviously, Tasha knew she was going to pick up on behalf of Chris. But that was, it was a total shock to her. And she was on really good form, I thought, Carol. She really was. And her and Peter get on well. And I thought that it was a high energy last hour and a half of panels or 35 minutes or whatever. which is what you want. So there we go.
And so what else happened? We had, who else did we meet at Mar? Oh, we had a bit of a chat with Sophie Isles, didn't we?
She's another one that's full of energy, isn't she, Sophie? We're looking to just do things, not do things slightly differently in front, but the way we get certain guests, we're refining it a little bit, got to move forward all the time. So we've got 7 or 8 guests already for next year, although I'm not going to tell you who apart from Colin at the moment. So one of the reasons I missed some of this stuff, there's a couple of guys called Richie and Mark who were filming over the weekend. They're runabout films and they're working on a potential documentary for release next year about Doctor Who in the wilderness years. And they got hold of the Devious guys first and they'd been talking to them. But anyhow, they came along and they did an interview with me at some stage on the Saturday about my memories of the wilderness years, one or two things that happened in them and how we all kept going. But obviously Devious was right in the heart of the wilderness years, wasn't it? So
I might be in that film as well, Tony.
Oh, might you?
Spoke to them last year.
Oh, I presume they haven't got back to you since then.
Moving on.
Oh, you know them anyhow then, so it's interesting. Yeah. And they wanted to film when we were showing Devious to see the audience reaction, then films. Actually, no, they didn't film some of the panel because we'll get filmed with that from other ways. But interesting, there's things going on behind the scenes all the time at an event like the Capital. I think I said again before, it was the busiest ever one. 315 people in total were there over the weekend. That's a lot of people for a British Doctor Who event. There won't be a bigger one this year or for some years in the past.
So still at the same hotel next year?
Yeah, I signed up for sometime early in 2021 for that, but there will need to be improvements on their part.
How did you think the layout of rooms went? I don't mean the one bay system or anything, but the rooms that were available to you.
What you mean, the actual conference rooms?
Yeah,
the suite is really good. It just means that effectively we can only use, we can't go, bar 92 is basically the end of how far we can go because the other rooms,
yeah,
just it doesn't work. So we are a little bit restricted, but we can, I'm rejigging the layout next year anyhow on feedback I've had. What was maybe the dealer's room will be something else. What was the photo room will be something else, all within the same area, but differently laid out. When you plan something without, you know, it looks great in theory, then sometimes it doesn't quite work as you would hope. Yeah. So fine tuning.
And this is the time of year when Mark and I get most nervous. Are we invited next year?
Well, unless I can find someone else, I guess we'll be inviting you back.
Thanks.
I'm being honest. Tickets won't go on sale. I was hoping they'd be on sale about a week afterwards. They'll be on sale from Easter Monday, I believe. We did sell or have sold 30% of tickets for next year.
Oh,
okay. So people can go on the Capital website from Monday onwards, Easter Monday onwards. And
I believe that's when it'll be, and we'll be announcing it, and we'll be confirming Colin as a guest, and then I'm going to take a little sabbatical.
I will be there next year, definitely. It's been a long time, but there's been a lot of life-changing stuff happening in that time for me, but things will slow down.
Well, that's excellent news anyway. I'm glad that you'll be with us next year. Cause I think
I'll order the room with the bunk beds again, shall I, Mark? And it's,
I don't think they have any of them.
No.
One thing that, although the hotel's service left something to be desired, guests in particular were delighted with the quality of their hotel rooms and the general plushness of the hotel.
Mm.
In that respect, I got a lot of positive feedback.
Did we tell you about our replacement for Paul Winter's catchphrase, as my will so mote it be?
Yeah, no.
Well, you know, he's been...
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can, spins a web, and he's...
Oh, no.
Here comes the Spider-Man.
You must start thinking of Ferrero Rocher there.
Yeah, absolutely. John Abinieri, wasn't it?
And he remembered that, I think most people who get invited on our podcast find it hard to forget it. He remembered that his appearance on the podcast with us. What was that? Oh, that was our discussion about our conventions, a thing of the past. My proudest ever podcast title. Conventionality belongs to yesterday.
Oh, yes.
So, as ever, Tony, we remain awed by the kindness and generosity of the dwarfs towards us. Clearly, you've worked out that we can be strong-armed into being nice to everyone. So, thanks very much for everything.
It's always a pleasure. Hayden, I really look forward to seeing you next year.
Yeah, you too, mate. You too.
You won't recognise him. And
fatherhood, that's what it does to you.
Colonel Sanders over here.
I thought you could say, like, Colonel Kurtz. Apocalypse Now.
I don't know. And, oh, look who's coming down the corridor. It's the Sons of Skaro. Dalek Skaros, have you got anything to say to us?
Emergency regulations. Please do not dump babies into the river.
Dalek Grey, we have enemy ships in Sector 27.
It's a trap!
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, folks.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddlydum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum, the empty space that circles time.